fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Everybody, happy Monday to you. So glad that you're with me for this week on The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. It's going to be a great week. Got lots of incredible stuff lined up for you. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. That's the toll-free studio line to call. If you've got a question for me, 888-914-9149. You can also email the program. It's great to get your email. It's great to hear from you. Questions, comments, thoughts, things you'd like me to talk about. Cale, that's the address. Cale, C-A-L-E at relevantradio.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter as well, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Well, I don't know if you heard the news, but the famous Greek composer Vangelis passed away a few days ago. I was reading about this in the Los Angeles Times, and he, of course, composed the score for a couple of famous films, Chariots of Fire, which we'll play for you in just a moment, and Blade Runner. And much to my maybe everlasting shame, I know there's a lot of Blade Runner fans out there, but I have not seen Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner with Harrison Ford. I haven't seen the director's cut of Blade Runner, and I haven't seen the remake of Blade Runner either, which came out a couple of years ago. And who starred in that movie, Jim? Are you a Blade Runner fan?
I do not know.
He doesn't
I'm
know.
Not it's a fan it's, of that. It's
I thought it was the Canadian it. Ryan Gosling who's the star of that film. Anyways, but we all know the theme for Chariots of Fire, that famous 1981 film which won Best Picture. Let's just play this in the background, Jim, because it's such a great, yeah, such a unique sound, electro pop synth. All right, so let me tell you about Vangelis, because it's kind of a cool story. And then, but there is a spiritual point to this, which I'll get into. Don't worry. So Vangelis, his actual name, his birth name was Evangelos. So it has to do with evangelization, right? Spreading the gospel. That's not the point I was going to make. But his real name is Evangelos Odysseas Papathanasiou. Okay? And that was his birth name. And he died in a hospital in France late on Tuesday of last week. And this was a cause for a lot of sadness in Greece. And in fact, the Prime Minister of Greece, Kyriakos Mitsotakis, pronounced that he is no longer among us. Vangelis is no longer among us. He tweeted that out when he passed away. So we all remember the theme from Chariots of Fire. And if you haven't seen the film, man, got to go check it out. It's one of the classics. It's really a classic film. So this song kind of plays as these young runners are kind of running in slow motion. It's a beach in Scotland. They're Olympic runners training for Great Britain, preparing for the 1924 Olympics in Paris, France. Anyways, so this tune is obviously, and the scene in the movie has lent itself to many a parody over the years as well. But Vangelis himself, I didn't really know much about him, but a really interesting dude, really interesting dude. Apparently, he was really private in real life, was a burly guy. He had shoulder-length hair and a beard. He used to quote Greek philosophy incessantly, and he saw artists, all artists, as a quote-unquote conduit for a basic universal force. Okay. So he loved space exploration, and he actually would write music four different planets. And they actually, because of his love of space exploration, there was a planet that was discovered that was actually named after him. Yeah, really cool. It's a microplanet, and it is somewhere between Mars and Jupiter. And the official name of this little microplanet is 6354 Vangelis. Hey, it's one thing to have a street or a school named after you, but having a whole planet named after you, that's not bad. That's not bad. So he was born in 1943 in Greece. He started playing the piano at age 4, had no formal lessons, and he claimed that he never learned to read music. He just kind of did it all by ear, I guess. And he was quoted as saying, quote, orchestration, composition, they teach these things in music schools, but there are some things you can never teach. You can't teach creation. And that's true. You can teach somebody maybe the basics, the technical parts of playing the piano, but you can't teach somebody, you know, to compose a great work. That's a lot of innate talent there. So obviously his big musical breakthrough, he was in a bunch of bands and stuff growing up, but his huge breakthrough came with doing the score for the movie Chariots of Fire. And that score, that musical score, earned one of the four Oscars that film won, which obviously included Best Picture. Yeah, he later wrote Blade Runner, as I mentioned off the top, also the soundtrack for the movie 1492, Conquest of Paradise. And as time went on, a lot of people asked him to do more musical scores for films, but he always turned it down. And he was quoted as saying, "Half of the films that I see don't need music. It sounds like something that's just stuffed in." That's a good quote. He's probably right about that. A lot of the music in films probably isn't necessary. And he just really eschewed commercial success. He didn't want to kind of keep going with that. And he got really interested in science, and that's where the whole planetary stuff came in. And when Stephen Hawking, the British theoretical physicist, passed away in 2018, he actually composed a musical tribute for Stephen Hawking that was broadcast out into outer space. So if any aliens were listening, they were treated to a new Vangelis tune. Anyways, he was just kind of apart from the musical industry. He never got into the whole drug culture of the music scene. And he said that made things very uncomfortable for him at times. He lived in London, Paris, and Athens. He actually had a house at the foot of the Acropolis in Athens. That's pretty cool. And he used to love to paint. He said, "Every day I paint and every day I compose music in that order." So interesting dude, Vangelis. May he rest in peace. But the film, I wanted to get into some talk about the film, because the film is actually based on a true story. And it's the story of two British runners in particular who competed in the 1924 Olympics, Harold Abrahams and Eric Liddell. Now, Eric Liddell actually was killed later on in China, in Japan-occupied China, as a missionary. He died of a brain tumor while he was in captivity. And he was actually born in China to missionary parents. It's a really incredible story about these two guys. And just the plot of the film, which, of course, as I said, is based on real events, it starts off in 1919 when one of the two protagonists in the film, that's Harold Abrahams, and he's a Jewish athlete, goes to the University of Cambridge and starts running there. Eric Liddell is kind of brought into the film. And like I said, he was born to Scottish missionary parents in China, comes back to Scotland. He's a great runner. He's training. He actually misses a church meeting. His faith is really important to him. And his sister, who's very devout, her name is Jenny, is really upset with him about pursuing competitive running. She wants him to go back to the mission field in China. And this is what he says to her. This is a great scene in the film. If you could play this clip, Jim.
"I've decided. I'm going back to China. The missionary service have accepted me."
"Oh, I'm so pleased.
But I've got a lot of running to do first. Jenny. Jenny, you've got to understand. I believe that God made me for a purpose. For China. But he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. To give it up would be to hold him in contempt. You were right. It's not just fun. To win is to honor him."
Yeah, that's just a great scene in the movie. And that line comes back later when he wins in the Olympic Games. "That God made me for a purpose. He made me for China, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure." Incredible. So he saw this as a way to glorify God, these natural gifts that he was given. I'm going to get into that more in just a minute. But I just want to tell you what happens, to give you a little bit of a synopsis here. So Eric Liddell, he was racing in the 100-meter dash at the time, which is kind of the marquee event of the Olympics. And so was Harold Abrahams. That was his specialty as well. And so when they first raced against each other, Eric Liddell beat Harold Abrahams. And Abrahams was really upset about this. He took, did not take it well, starts working with a trainer, tries to get better. So eventually they get to the Olympics, the 1924 Paris Olympics. And Eric Liddell discovers that the heats for the 100 meters happened to fall on a Sunday. And because of his religious convictions, he's like, I can't do it. I can't run on a Sunday. And everybody tries to pressure him to run. The Prince of Wales pressures him to run. The Olympic Committee wants him to do it. And he says, no, I'm absolutely not going to do it. I'm not going to run on the Lord's Day. Now, whatever you think of that, you got to respect the religious conviction there. So what happens in the end is that one of Eric Liddell's teammates had already won a silver medal in another event. He said, look, I've got an Olympic medal here. Why don't you take my place in the 400 meters, which is one lap around the track. It's a different discipline, but you can have my spot. It's on a Thursday. It's not going to conflict with your religious beliefs. And Liddell says, man, thanks. I'll take it. I'll do it. And so he actually, before he races, he actually preaches in the Church of Scotland, which is obviously a Protestant denomination, that weekend, the weekend before his big race. And he quotes Isaiah 40. And this is the famous passage. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youths shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Obviously a very famous passage from the book of Isaiah. So back for a second to Harold Abrahams, the other guy. So he gets absolutely trounced in the 200-meter race, and he knows that the last chance he's going to have to win a medal is in the 100 meters, which is his specialty, and he wins it. He wins it. It's a great scene in the movie. So Eric Liddell, on that Thursday, he races in the 400 meters. Nobody thinks he has any chance. A lot of the other athletes are kind of saying, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk, not a problem at all. But there's an American athlete by the name of Jackson Schultz, and he approaches Eric Liddell before the race, and he gives him a piece of paper, and he opens it up, and this is all in the film, by the way, this is in real life, but he opens it up, and he reads what Jackson Schultz wrote, and it's actually a passage from the Bible, from 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 30. He who honors me, I will honor. He who honors me, I will honor. And Liddell kind of holds onto that paper as he runs his race, and I'm about to spoil it. He wins the gold medal in the 400. So triumph. It's an absolute triumph. And it's an incredible film. And like I said, after that, after the Olympics, Liddell did in fact go to China as a missionary once again, where he did give his life. And I wanted to read to you what he wrote in a book that he wrote. I'm just going to find it here for a second. Just give me 1 second. He wrote some stuff on the discipline of the Christian life. And I think you'll find this really, really fascinating. So, yeah, the book was called The Disciplines of the Christian Life. And sometimes when we think about the spiritual disciplines, we think, oh, man, this is going to be drudgery. This is going to be not exciting. It's going to be too predictable. But really, that's where the joy is. It's just like in a race, in an Olympic race, you've got to stay in your lane. That's not drudgery. That's the discipline of staying in your lane. There's freedom within that. There's freedom within that. And here's what he says. This is what he wrote in the book. This is Eric Liddell. He says, Christianity is not discipline, though discipline enters into it. Christianity is not morality, but the moral laws will be followed. Christianity is not following a great example, but this will be done. Christianity is not living by laws or rules. It is living by grace. True Christianity starts with the new birth. You must be born again. Of course, he's quoting Jesus there, who is speaking to Nicodemus, John chapter 3, verse 7. The new birth is God coming into your life and giving you a new nature, a nature of love to God and man. Nothing in life can make up for the lack of this. Nothing can take its place. And then he quotes from St. Paul in 1 Corinthians 13, though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profits me nothing. Without love, I am nothing. Marvel not that I said unto you that you must be born again. And so, obviously, as a Protestant, Eric Liddell would probably have a different take on what it means to be born again. We as Catholics would say, this happens, you're born again. And maybe you've been asked that question by a non-Catholic Christian, have you been born again? And you can say, yes, I have, if you've been baptized, because that's what it's all about. Jesus says you must be born again of water and the Spirit, or in some translations it says you must be born from above, Jesus tells Nicodemus, of water and the Spirit. And that was always seen as a reference to baptism up until the time of the Protestant Reformation in the 16th century. Nobody ever interpreted that as being anything but about baptism until that time. So it's kind of interesting. So, but I do think it's intriguing that Eric Liddell wrote about the fact that it's not about rules and discipline, although it does obviously factor into it. Christianity is not about morality, but the moral laws still have to be followed. What does he mean by that? I think what he means is that you can't do this stuff unless you have the power of God living within you. And this is what we get through baptism. This is the life of Christ that we get living in us. And of course, it's strengthened by the other sacraments, especially the Eucharist. When we lose it, we lose that life of God, the grace of God living within us through mortal sin. There's confession to bring it back. Strengthened, of course, by the greatest of all sacraments, the Eucharist. And so, this is what he wrote in his book. I'm just going to give one more quote from Eric Liddell. Christian living is made possible by the new birth. You can never understand the meaning of Christian living until God comes into your life. Christian living is bound up with Christian faith, personal faith in God, which brings his power into your life. It is not by mere commandments that a Christian lives, but by a new spirit in his heart. Yeah, and again, I think it's true that when we receive God's Spirit through baptism, we get that turbo boost of his Spirit through confirmation, that does enable us to live the way that he's commanded us to live. And so that way it's not, we can't do it on our own. We can't do it in pure human strength. And St. Paul wrote about that a lot in his writings. And so I just think that the story of Eric Liddell is incredibly inspirational. And this idea of when I run, I feel his pleasure. There's a lot of application to that line to our spiritual lives, because sometimes people think that they have to ignore the natural gifts that they've been given in order to really please God. That if there are things that they like, things that they enjoy, that God somehow wants them to give them up in order to be spiritual. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I'm going to tell you more about that in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break here on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We'll be right back. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back. A magnificent Monday to you. Call in right now, 888-914-9149, studio line 888-914-9149, or follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We were talking before the break about the death of the Greek composer Vangelis and his famous score for the movie Chariots of Fire, a true life story about some British athletes in the Olympics in 1924. One of them, Eric Liddell, who was born on the mission field, ran, won a gold medal, went back to the mission field and actually died there of a brain tumor while in an internment camp that was run by the Japanese in occupied China. It's an incredible story, but he's known for this line in the film, "God made me for China, but God also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure." I'm going to talk about some of the implications of that for the spiritual life. But first, we're going to go to the phones right now. Paul is calling from Youngstown, Ohio. Good to have you back, Paul. How you doing?
Hi, Cale. I'm doing well.
Good, good.
I just wondered if you were planning on participating next year in the 21-mile Walk to Mary event.
Is that a challenge?
Well, I thought if you participated, as you are approaching the 21-mile marker, perhaps they could play the Chariots of Fire theme song.
Maybe we could play it right now. You know, I can just imagine myself, you know, walking across the finish line. Certainly not running in my physical state right now. You know what,
well,
Paul? Go ahead.
Yeah, you could start training for it right now. By next May, you'd be in top condition.
It would probably take me a whole year to get in top condition, Paul. If you could see the state of my girth right now, it's not exact. I'm not exactly in Olympic shape. Let's put it that way. But you know, it's summertime now, so I've got no excuse. I've got to get out running. I've got to do it. You know, the body's a temple, right? And right now, it's a rather expansive temple. Let's put it that way. Well, thanks for your call, Paul. Yeah, I should definitely keep that in mind. I should definitely do the Walk to Mary. Hey, we've got to get in shape, folks. And by that, I mean spiritual shape as well. And in fact, this whole thing with Eric Liddell, "God made me fast, and when I run, I feel his pleasure." Got me thinking about this acronym that's always stuck in my head. And I encountered this guy during my time away from the Catholic faith. As you know, I spent about 10 years outside the church in evangelical ministry. Went to an evangelical seminary, served in some Protestant churches, came back into the Catholic Church. And one guy who I came into contact with his writings a lot was Rick Warren. You probably heard of this guy, or at least the name. If the name doesn't ring a bell, maybe his book would. He wrote this book that sold a gazillion copies. It was called The Purpose-Driven Life. The Purpose-Driven Life. But that whole book was kind of an offshoot of a book he wrote about how to grow your church called The Purpose-Driven Church. It was kind of an intriguing book. And he ran this Protestant, I don't know if he still does or not, but he was the pastor of a very prominent evangelical congregation called Saddleback in Southern California. So if you're listening in California, you probably heard of this guy in Orange County, Rick Warren in Saddleback. And very often they try to evangelize secular people. And unfortunately, a lot of Catholics went there as well because they just really weren't very well formed in their faith. But I digress a little bit. He did have a really intriguing section in one of his books about, he called it, "You Are Shaped for Significance." And he used this acronym SHAPE, S-H-A-P-E. And here's what the letters stood for. S stood for spiritual gifts. Okay, so the Bible talks a lot about spiritual gifts. In St. Paul's letters, he talks about the many gifts that God gave the body of Christ for building it up, for building up the church. And that would include even gifts that aren't so obviously quote-unquote spiritual, like hospitality. That's a natural spiritual gift. It's really important. And so the S stands for spiritual gifts. The H in the acronym SHAPE stands for heart. And that means really what you're passionate about. And I'm going to come back to that in just a second. The A stands for abilities. And these are sort of natural abilities that we've been gifted with. So Eric Liddell, as he said, "God made me fast." And that was part of his purpose for his life, to glorify him through athletics. The P stands for personality. And the E stands for experiences. So when you add that all up, that's your shape. It's a common, it's sort of a composite of all that you are. Your spiritual gifts that God has given you, your heart, what you're passionate about, what kind of drives you. A is your abilities, your natural abilities. P is your natural personality. And E is your life experiences. And the whole concept behind this is that, like a good woodworker, God always works with the grain rather than against the grain. And that makes sense, you know, if God is like a good woodworker. And I remember this from shop class, you know, in high school, trying to, you know, work with wood and use the plane. And, you know, if you go against the grain, it's going to be a mess. So you got to go with the grain. Well, of course, God himself was in the business of carpentry, right? So he knows a little bit about this, working with the grain, the way he made us as well. So here's the deal. For example, if you look at the E in the SHAPE acronym, experiences, God never wastes an experience. That's something that, you know, Rick Warren said. And I think that's true. Even a bad experience, God can bring good out of it. So just, I don't know, off the top of my head, if you come from, let's say you've struggled with alcoholism or something like that in the past, or substance addiction, that's if God has helped you to overcome that, that may not have been a great experience. It may have had, and probably did have, a lot of deleterious effects in your life, but you can help somebody else who's struggling with that, because you know the way out, and you know how God has helped you to overcome. So God never wastes an experience for good or for ill. So, you know, really, it's very Catholic, very much a Catholic idea, because we believe that grace builds on nature. That's something that St. Thomas Aquinas said. God's grace doesn't destroy nature. It builds upon it. It supernaturalizes it, lifts it up. So I think, I don't know, this whole idea with Chariots of Fire, Vangelis, it just kind of made me think about that. And if you haven't seen the movie, like I said, you're definitely going to want to check that out. It's a really great flick. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Another thing that Eric Liddell, who gave his life on the mission field in China post-Olympics, one of the things that he talked about in his book was this idea of discipline. And again, I don't think we should look at discipline as a bad thing, as something that's going to constrain us or cramp our style. But this is where we're at. It actually allows us to flourish. It's kind of like if you have a bunch of wild horses out in the field, you're going to want to put a fence around that so they don't get away. But within that fence line, they have all the freedom that they want, but they're safe. They're safe. If there's a cliff on the other side, we don't want them to fall over. So within that fence line, they can run around, be creative. And I think we kind of have to do that with our own life as Catholics, especially on a day-to-day basis. And somebody sent me an article. This is a really interesting article. It's actually from a Catholic women's magazine. And it's called Radiant Magazine. Now, why would I read an article from a Catholic women's magazine? Well, first of all, I have to figure out how women think, because I'm married to a Catholic woman. So if I don't figure this out, I'm in big trouble. But this is actually applicable to everyone as well. And it was an article written by a gal named Ava Laylor. Apologies if I butchered that, Ava. But the title of it was An Argument for Adding Catholic Rituals into Our Day. And I think ritual is really important. I'm seeing that more and more as I go through life, especially now that I'm a parent. Kids are very much about ritual. And if you have a child, especially a small child, you know what I'm talking about. The routine is like absolutely crucial. If you mess up the routine, whether it's the bedtime routine or the getting up routine, kids thrive on routine. And they don't do very well usually if it's kind of helter-skelter. So this article talks about, the author talked about finding out about how the Swedes, how people in Sweden discover happiness at work. Now, as you know, Sweden is one of the countries that time and time again will be right up there on the list of the happiest countries in the world. Like, Sweden is always right up there. So maybe we should listen to this a little bit. And They're not just happy because of IKEA and all the cool furniture that they have. There's much more to it. So there's apparently the Swedes have a custom called, and again, I'm not sure how this is pronounced, but it's spelled F-I-K-A, Fika or Fika, I don't know. I'll say Fika. You can say Fika. Tomato, tomato, doesn't matter. But what's it all about? Well, the Swedes, twice a day, they enter into this custom of Fika. And what do they do? It's all about coffee and socialization with their coworkers. And usually it happens at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. And this is a Swedish tradition. It actually started in the early part of the 20th century when, you know, it's the industrial age and factory workers realized that actually the employees, the guys who ran the factory realized that, man, if we give these guys a couple of coffee breaks every day, and this shouldn't be rocket science, but if we give these guys a couple of serious coffee breaks every day, it helps to reduce incidents in the factory. You know, people aren't fighting with each other. They seem to work better together. So that's what they started to do. They started introducing the 10 a.m. coffee break and the 3 p.m. coffee break, coffee and socialization. So, hey, it worked for the Swedes. So Ava Laylor started, you know, reading about this and learning about this. And then she said, well, why don't we as Catholics do something like this? Why don't we have some customs that we can add into our normal day, some sort of a ritual that we have, and we can do it on a daily basis. And yeah, of course, we have the weekly ritual of Sunday Mass, our Sunday obligation. Yep. But what about on the daily? Because we can't just kind of do it once a week. It's not going to take. So what are some things that we can do every single day, especially with our families as well? And she talked about how she found this Catholic on Instagram. And of course, people post a lot of stuff about their lives on Instagram. They have their Instagram stories or whatever. I'm not on Instagram, so I have no story to tell you. But there's someone on Instagram who posts on her account about afternoon tea time that she has with her boys. This is kind of interesting. She has six boys, and the six boys and their mom, they have afternoon tea together every day. And so the mom will set up this table, some sort of goodies, and they start with a prayer, and then they do something social together. And usually it's a little bit of reading. And sometimes they'll listen to audiobooks like the Narnia books or The Hobbit or something like that. And they'll actually like kind of make it pretty formal. They'll have teacups and saucers and a teapot and everything like that. And it's hard to imagine six boys sitting down for a tea party, but there you go. There you go. And she thought, wow, this is kind of cool. I'd love to do that with my kids one day. But I've got to do something now, something that I can kind of have a little social time with God, like, you know, coffee and social time with God. So this is what she decided to do. She says that every day she kind of sits down, has a coffee, and just for like 5 to 7 minutes or so, she prays the Divine Mercy Chaplet. And as you know, the Divine Mercy Chaplet doesn't take that long. It's something that anybody can get into. And we do it every day here on Relevant Radio during the Drew Mariani Show, which of course precedes this one. And at 3 p.m. Central, it's the Divine Mercy Chaplet time. And people have their prayer requests, and it's a great thing. It's a great thing. And so that's something that this author, Ava Laylor, did. She just started to say, okay, I'm going to have coffee and the chaplet. And that's going to be kind of a ritual that I'm going to take into my everyday Catholic life. But there's other things that we can do to kind of supernaturalize the everyday. We can make sure that there's some Catholic art in our homes. And some people are in the habit of maybe having an image of Our Lady in every room of the house somehow. And it can be subtle. It doesn't have to, you don't have to have a full-size statue of the Pietà in every room of your home, but you can maybe just subtly, you know, not go over the top, but so that a visitor might say, oh, there's something different here. There's something different here. And so you got to figure out some things that'll work for you to kind of supernaturalize the everyday. Now, obviously, one of the other big things you can do other than the chaplet is praying the rosary. And so a lot of people, of course, millions of people are in the habit of praying the rosary every day with Father Rocky on the Family Rosary Across America, right here on Relevant Radio. And if you stick around later tonight, of course, Tim Reese's show is coming up next, and then the Family Rosary Across America at 7 p.m. Central. You're not going to want to miss that. You can do that. You can join the Relevant Radio family. Maybe that's a great time for you to do that with your family in the evening, maybe before the kids go to bed. It's a great, great thing to do. So you got to find a way to have some prayer, some conversation with God. And that can be as simple as maybe if you're out running errands during the day, you can slip into your local parish, especially if they have a perpetual adoration chapel, and just make a little visit with our Lord and just spend some time communicating with him. That's the best place to do it. Not everybody can do that because of their schedules, but if you can find some time during the day to get in front of our Lord in the tabernacle, that is ideal. That is ideal. You just can't beat it. But like I said, you do what you can. Some people are in the habit of creating a little prayer area in their home. I've seen lots of examples of this. A lot of Catholic friends on Twitter have kind of made these little mini altars in sort of a special room in their home. And they'll have images of our Lord, Our Lady, the saints, maybe some candles going. They kind of just kind of set the atmosphere for prayer. It's a place where you can go just to kind of get some alone time with God. And Ava Laylor also says, and this is a great, great thing you can do too. You can put little holy water fonts near your door, the front door of your home. You can kind of bless yourself as you go out into the world. Say, Lord, be with me during the workday, whatever the case may be, at school. And then when you come home, you kind of also bless yourself. And that's kind of a nice little thing to do because, again, the family is supposed to be like a domestic church, like a little seminary almost, right? And the word seminary means seedbed. So obviously there are these little people that are trying to grow up and we're trying to grow them right. And it's a great way to remind ourselves of, yeah, this has to, we've got to bring the atmosphere of Christ and the Holy Family into the lives of our own families. And so these are kind of cool suggestions, just little things that we can do, little Catholic rituals that we can start to incorporate into our day so that we can bring the presence of God. He's always there. This presence is always there, but we're not always aware of it. And this is what these things help us to do. You're listening to the K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio. I'll be right back after this really quick break. 888-914-9149. When I come back, I'm going to be sharing with you a story about somebody who really came alive in his faith quite literally at the end of the world. Be right back. It's K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. It's toll-free studio line, 888-914-9149. Or you can also send me a message on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And we were talking before the break about the concept of adding Catholic rituals into our day. It's really important that we do that we not just kind of live our daily life in haphazard ways. We kind of consciously get ourselves in positions where we're aware of God's presence. And I heard a story about this. This is a true story about a man named Luis who lives in Peru. And Luis has a really interesting job. He has to travel to Antarctica, of all places, very frequently for work throughout the year. And man, if you thought it was difficult during times of lockdown, during the quarantines, during COVID times, and we're still in COVID times, of course, it hasn't gone away. But man, if you thought it was difficult to live your faith then, you have no idea. This guy was, let's put it this way, he was very well prepared for the events of 2020 and beyond because of his work. And he started going to Antarctica in the year 2014. And Before he went there for the first time, he attended something that was called a recollection. And this is a series of events that are put on by Opus Dei. And basically, they're like mini retreats. And the priest who was preaching at this recollection, he said, he was just saying to the guys that were there, how well do you know Saint Jose Maria? And next month in June, on June 26th, that's the feast day of Saint Jose Maria, one of the great spiritual events in the month of June. It's a month dedicated to the Sacred Heart. Lots of cool stuff coming up next month. And so this guy Luis is like, well, I actually don't know much about St. Jose Maria. So when he went to Antarctica, he brought with him a biography of St. Jose Maria, and he started reading it, and he said that was really his only companion on the trip, other than the penguins, the seals, and the whales that you see in the southern seas. There was no internet. There were no cell phones. He was quite literally at the very end of the world. So he used a lot of free time to get to know this particular saint. And one of the things that St. Jose Maria used to talk about all the time is this idea of having a plan of life, so that you've got to structure your days intentionally. You've got to have a spiritual plan. You've got to have a game plan going in. You can't just let it happen to you. And so he really was strong on having what he called norms of piety. And there's nothing really there are things that almost every Christian should be doing when you think about it. Daily Mass, if possible. You can't always do that. But hey, if we really believe that the Eucharist is Jesus Christ, body, blood, soul, and divinity, why not do whatever it is within your power to try to receive our Lord, if possible, on the daily, not just on Sundays? I mean, that's kind of the bare minimum, right? Can't always do that because of work and other commitments. But if you can even just make it to one extra Mass during the week, it can have huge dividends in your spiritual life. Because I don't know about you, I need Jesus. Just period, in order to just get through it. You know, I need help. So we all do. And so that was a big thing that St. Jose Maria was strong on: daily Mass if possible, daily rosary. We talked about that before, making visits to the Blessed Sacrament, saying the Angelus at noon or the Regina Coeli as we do right now during the Easter season. But this idea of just want to get back to this idea of the Mass for a minute, because this guy Luis, there were no Masses around. He was literally at the end of the world in Antarctica, and he found himself there once again just before Christmas time. And he knew that St. Jose Maria used to practice these, what he used to call a quote-unquote a dry Mass. Now, what's a dry Mass? Well, he had to do this during the time of the Spanish Civil War. And a lot of people don't know about the extremely bloody Spanish Civil War, which happened, you know, in large part in the 1920s, 1930s in Spain. There was a huge persecution unleashed against the church. Thousands of Catholics were killed, imprisoned. Priests were being, nuns were being martyred in the public square. I mean, it's just ghastly. A lot of people know nothing about this. And so St. Jose Maria, as a priest, went into hiding, and there were times when he couldn't celebrate the Mass. He had no access to hosts. He had no access to a chalice or, you know, wine mixed with water. And so he had all the Eucharistic prayers memorized, though. So he would say the Mass by heart, kind of by himself or with others if there were other people around. And he would just do a spiritual communion, which a lot of people had to do during the pandemic. They couldn't get to Mass. Masses were canceled. So we all kind of got used to this idea of doing a spiritual communion. So he called this a dry Mass. So this guy Luis, when he was in Antarctica, he had to kind of do this. And so it was really amazing being in the natural beauty of that region, but there really wasn't much going on religiously. However, one day he was able to go to a place called St. George Island, and there were two churches there. One was a Russian Orthodox church, and the other one was a Catholic church. So he goes into the Catholic church, and he finds, next to an image of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, he found a prayer card for St. Jose Maria. And he's like, wow, I can't believe this. I was just reading about this saint, and here's a prayer card. And so that just made him think about this whole idea of the dry Mass. And so he started to do this on the daily, try to, you know, at least follow along with, he's like, hey, there's got to be a Mass somewhere right now in the world going on. I'll sort of spiritually unite myself to this. And he started making a plan for his daily life, not only for when he's going to get his work done, but to be able to kind of, at strategic times throughout the day, to pray, to say the Angelus, to do his rosary, that sort of thing. And he found a lot of peace there. He found an awful lot of peace there. And this is one of the things that we have to do during our daily life. And as one preacher said, it's a little bit like having telephone poles along the road. We don't always see these anymore because now they tend to bury the power lines in the ground. But we've all seen telephone poles, and you don't want to keep them too far apart because then the power lines will sag, and you definitely don't want them to hit the ground. So our sort of daily rituals, our Catholic rituals, where we reconnect with God, whether it's the Mass, whether it's our mental prayer, we just kind of have this conversational prayer with God for a few minutes, where we pray the Rosary, say the Angelus, that sort of thing, the Regina Caeli, all of this sort of stuff, they're kind of like the telephone poles along the road, along the journey of our day. And that's where the spiritual power comes from. So that we don't want to go too long between these Catholic reminders throughout the day, because otherwise that line might hit the ground, right? We got to string them out really, really well, try to organize them very well throughout the day so we can get them done in a natural way. And they will help us to get through. They will totally help us to remind ourselves that God is always with us. Let's go to the phones right now. Dee Dee is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Dee Dee, how you doing?
Hey, Kale.
Hi.
The reason I'm calling, Kale. Mm-hmm. Kale, you're too handsome to have a girth problem. Girth, G-I-R-T-H.
Yes. So what's your solution?
Okay, so I have some biblical advice for you.
Okay, all right, let's hear it.
Romans 12.
Mm.
First verse. Offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. Mm. Holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. So next time you complain about your girth, G-I-R-T-H, yeah, I will not have pity.
Yes, that's right. Well, I thank you very much, Dee Dee, for that sage advice. And yes, as St. Paul says, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. You know what the problem with the living sacrifice is? A living sacrifice can always choose to get up and crawl off the altar and just go do their own thing. So that's the battle, right? Every day in the Catholic life, we've got to make that intentional choice. And yeah, by the way, I was trying to, I guess a little bit trying to deal with that issue and trying to once again create that. Sculpt. One of the things St. Jose Maria said, you got to create the sculpted image of Christ. Well, you know, certainly within, for sure. Outside, you try to do that too. So I decided to partake in a little bit of golf. Maybe I was inspired by the PGA Championship. I tried to play golf on Saturday, and I got caught in this incredible, this was like a near tornado that happened. This was a massive, massive storm. And I have never heard of this before, but there's a certain kind of storm that's called, it's not necessarily a tornado, but it's called a derecho or a derecho, D-E-R-E-C-H-O, derecho or derecho. Apparently it's a Spanish word, which means straightforward. So this thing was like, this storm ran through the region and it was like super intense. So I was on the golf course, literally they blew the air horn, the clouds rolled in out of nowhere, and the winds, the rain, the hail. I mean, this is biblical. This is like the movie Caddyshack, if you've ever seen this. Trees started falling down all around us. We were just able to escape into the clubhouse in time. We got to shelter, thank God. But the flagpole on the course was literally bent at a 45-degree angle. I mean, I've never seen winds like this, trees coming down. We were lucky we didn't get hit by a tree getting back in. So that was my exciting adventure of the weekend. That was a little bit more excitement than I had planned on, that is for sure. All right, let's go to John in Encitas, California. How you doing, John?
Good, Kale. When people ask me how I am, I tell them I've been better and I've been worse. I've been a blessing and I've been a curse.
Nice.
I've been dry and I've had a thirst. But now that I'm ready for the hearse, I put Jesus first.
Oh, I like that.
So anyway, and though they're making mirth about your girth, it wasn't so at your birth. It only at death will you know your true worth. But I had Russian Orthodox friends, and I learned the word pustinia. And I'm in my pustinia in Encinitas, which is Spanish for little oaks. I live a mile from the Pacific. And I'm in my pustinia room, and pustinia is a Russian word for desert. So Jesus,
desert, okay,
in order to commune completely and fully with his Father, would go off into the desert. And my desert room just has attentiveness to the Lord through icons, holy water, and my Our Lady of Guadalupe candle, Pustinia.
I like that. Hey, John, let me jump in here. First of all, I think you missed your calling. You should have been a rapper. That was some great rhyming that you spitting some great rhymes there at me. I appreciate that. And I like this idea of having a desert room. And that's kind of one of the things we were talking about earlier, this idea of maybe creating a special prayer enclave in your home, just a special kind of place that you can go to. Because I do think that your environment does set the tone for many things in life. We could spend a lot of time talking about this, but yeah, I like the idea of having a desert room. And I liked your rap as well, John. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for the call. Hey, it's been great to rap with you the last hour on the Cale Clark Show. I'll be back again tomorrow. Jim Shaper produced. Patrick Alog worked the phones. Timmery's up next. Stay tuned. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.